It's Wednesday, September 24th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 353 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 36 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
My name is Pat.
I almost forgot to say my name. I was so enthralled by Wayne. I was thinking of the story.
Wayne's so damn sexy.
Well, Wayne is really sexy. And then I started telling the story.
I'm wearing new clothes, baby.
I know.
You are. That's just a very nice shirt. It's buttoned up. I look like a friggin' Best Buy employee here. I've got my khaki pants and my solid dark colored polo shirt on.
Yeah.
But
I was thinking
about that today as I walked by a mirror today and I'm like, I work in IT. Why am I dressed like a Best Buy employee?
Isn't that the IT uniform though?
No, that's just it. You
really?
Never dress like this when IT.
What are your dress? Oh,
not the
IT,
color
okay.
combination.
You got a black shirt. Well, so you got a black shirt, not a blue shirt. I was thinking more Micro Center.
Yeah.
You're more a Micro Center employee than me.
So what is the proper attire for a professional IT person?
Well, see, that's just it. The proper attire is not look like an employee of Micro Center or Best Buy.
Okay.
It's because an employee of Best Buy who is in the Geek Squad, that's what it's called,
right.
Geek Squad, is usually like, I'm going to technical school or I'm going for a CS degree sort of thing. And when you're a IT professional who's been doing this for a few years, that's not exactly the image you want to put forth.
Okay. But still, what I'm asking is, like, what level of dress? Because you are wearing what is considered where I work, business casual.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd call that business casual.
Are you saying that it's more than business casual?
No.
Or just that you're wearing a solid color polo? That's the problem.
It's the khaki pants
with
a dark colored solid polo.
Okay, so that's what you want to avoid. If you had a multicolored polo on,
multicolored polo,
fine.
Absolutely. So, or if I had a dark,
or if
pants,
it was pink,
or if I had green.
What about pink? Because John can pull off a pink polo.
John can totally pull off pastels and pinks.
Yes,
and I told him that he wore. Because,
oh, he does. He's brilliant at it.
That's my fault. Not my fault. I think he looks great in it. Remember a few years ago, call it pink because we're all men, but salmon-colored shirts.
I'm a real man. I love pink.
Yeah. Salmon-colored shirts were popular. They were in style. Somebody got John one, like as a gift or something, and he wore it, and he came by me. He's like, man, I don't really know about this shirt or whatever. And I looked at him, and I'm like, that shirt looks really good on you because of your skin tone, the color of your hair, and you know, it's
very complimentary.
He looks good in pastels.
Yep.
I look good all the time. I look good in dark colors or dark earth tones, blacks or reds or browns, that sort of thing.
When is this all the time? Because I haven't seen you during this time.
Yeah, well, that's because, Wayne, you are far more sexy than I am.
Right, okay.
You are a bright, shining sex star, and you drowned out my life.
It's funny you should mention, though, looking like you work at a Best Buy or something.
Yeah.
Because before I started
dressing... Because do I look like I work at a Best Buy right now?
Not a Best Buy, because they usually do blue.
It's not blue, yeah.
Before I started wearing button-ups, I used to do the polos and khaki thing.
Yeah.
And I would forget that I had my work badge on sometimes. So I'd go into a store like a Target, a Walmart, or a Best Buy, and I would constantly have people come up to me and think I work there.
Yeah.
Almost every time I'd go in a store, it would happen. And then after I'd tell them no, then I'd remember, oh, I have my badge on.
Yeah, I've only had that happen once. And I don't think it had anything to do with the way I dressed. Maybe it did. I was working at a place that required formal clothing, so I was wearing slacks, button-up shirt, tie. I don't think I was wearing a suit coat. And I was in a casino. And I was actually waiting on some people from work for a happy hour or some crap like that. And I was just leaning up against a post. And people tell me I perpetually look pissed off. That's just my default.
Bitch face.
I have bitch face, okay, apparently. And somebody approached me. I don't remember what the deal was, but they thought that I was casino security.
Because you were staring off into space, thinking about superpowers.
Yeah, I don't even know why. For any other reason, my Facebook page, that'll make more sense. But go on.
And they thought you were casing the place. Or not casing it as in Dorava, but you were like on the lookout for the card sharps and all the people stealing from the little...
My eyes are on focus, so I see all.
Oh, yeah.
I pick it in the star. So, Chad, So before we're recording, Chad is trying to tell these guys that when I was a kid, I owned a Mixmaster. The only Mixmaster I can think of was the Constructicon.
No, not the Mixmaster, just Constructicon. So we were talking about ice cream. Well, okay, so we went to this place called Freddy's. Is that it? Freddy's?
Yeah, we went to Freddy's for dinner, yes.
Yeah, Freddy's for dinner, and Pat got a turtle sundae, and I got a funnel cake sundae because, you know, I'm trying to lose weight and all.
Yeah.
So, and I just looked at you bastards eating in front of a diabetic with dirty looks.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
So, and Pat had mentioned that he ordered it as a
when
concrete.
I first went up there, now I, when I first went up there, she asked me, she goes, I'll have the turtle because I love turtles. And for those of you who don't know what a turtle is, I guess
it's a small amphibian.
It is. In terms of a dessert treat on frozen custard or ice cream, but frozen custard is better. It's pecans and then hot fudge and hot caramel over the top of that, with then whipped cream and a cherry. So it's that combination. It's the ice cream version of the
turtle. Yeah, and he wanted that all in a thing in a mix.
Well, she goes, I wanted that. I'm like, I ordered it. I'm like, I'll have the turtle. She goes, what size? I'm like, I'll just have the regular size, whatever. And then she hits me with, do you want the concrete or the sundae? And then I was stumped because I love concrete. So I'm like, I'll just go with the sundae through order. And then I changed my mind. I'm like, oh, you know what? Is it too late for me to change that to a concrete? Because I think I want it all blended together. And she goes, oh, no, that's fine.
But apparently so she did that.
It had already gone into the computer. So, you know.
So anyway.
No, this is f***ing interesting. Let me finish, goddammit.
This is 5 miles of walking for a two-mile story.
That was like a Grandpa Simpson story.
So, yeah. So anyway.
And who loves the Simpsons?
He's pointing at Dan.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway. Dan and I have been friends since preschool. I don't remember the age.
I was three.
Yeah.
Which means you were...
I am 6 months older than you.
Yeah, so you would have been three or four.
Yeah.
But I was three at the time.
Yeah. I have been going over to Dan's house for years. And by his house, I mean his parents' house when we were kids. I have been going over there for years. Well, his parents, or Dan, had a Mixmaster. And a Mixmaster is a shake machine. It's one of those, it has the motor on top, and it has the metal tumbler, and you put the ice cream milk in there, and you hit and zzz, and it whirls up and makes a milkshake.
Yeah, okay. All right, let me tell you the history behind that, because actually, sounds like a Grandpa Simpson story.
Well, let me finish the story real quick. I'm almost done.
There's
I'm in the home stretch.
There's history behind this nickel.
I'm sure there is. But I had been going to Dan's house for years, and I've always saw this thing, and I was kind of fascinated by it. But I never, for whatever reason, asked to have one made for me. Because to me, it was always more of a decoration. It was very out of place. Very 1940s sort of Americana look to it. It was very old looking. And it looked more like a decoration, I guess.
It is that old.
It is
not
that
40s,
old.
50s. But yeah. Yes, go on.
And so one day, I don't remember who asked you, but I was like, hey, does that work? Or, hey, there's this thing. And Dan's like, do you want a shake? And I'm like, do I? And so he gets out, and his family had like real whole milk, now the skim milk hippie crap. Whole milk, chocolate, ice cream in the tumbler, makes it all up for me. It's awesome. But that's my story.
Yeah, all right.
But so, this went on for years.
So I'll tell you the story behind that milkshake machine.
Mm-hmm. And where is it
now? Is it going to bring all of us to the yard?
Brought me to the yard.
Yeah, if you ever had a milkshake out of this thing.
Like a real one.
Because this is a real milkshake machine. And it goes back to the 1950s. If you were to see it, it's this kind of weird Art Deco green, kind of faded green color. Where it comes from is my dad's parents, so my paternal grandparents, they owned a restaurant in Memphis, Tennessee for a very long time. And I could tell you a lot of stories about that, including how my dad blew up things on the ceiling and injured people trying to break into it. But that would be bonus episode material, unless we want to turn this into a bonus episode. I'll save that for later. When they shut that restaurant down, I mean, this is one of those, they don't build them like they used to.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing seriously was made in the 1950s. This thing is now, what, 60-ish years old.
Used through a restaurant and then used in a family that had four siblings and two adults.
Yes. And it has seen a lot of use. Yeah. But the one thing that you have to know about when you use it, because this thing is all metal. Once again, they don't make them like they used to. This thing doesn't break. It doesn't break down, but it is also not safe. And you will find this out the first time you go to make a milkshake and decide to rest your hand on the metal edge of the sink And all of a sudden, your body is in excruciating pain because this thing is grounding out through you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that thing is not grounded. And so if you touch anything metal, it hurts like a bitch.
Just like things from the 40s and 50s or
something. Yeah, and you will forget this. I say this as someone who used it a lot. Until you touch the dishwasher or the sink or anything metal nearby, then you get a very quick and painful reminder mm-hmm. that, in fact, this thing is not grounded.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah.
There were so many points in that story there where I'm just looking around and I'm like, I don't make mama jokes about any of these guys. I'm getting the setup here. But none of these guys I make mama jokes about. It actually hurt to hear that story because I wanted to make mama jokes. It was a perfect setup. But no, none of you guys.
Just not mama joke material.
No.
I don't know what the mama joke would be in that.
I didn't really
know. Your mama's so fat, you own a milkshake machine? I from the 1950s?
It was well used.
Oh, okay.
That was
your mama's well used.
Yes.
Yeah.
There were a lot of comments like that.
Whenever you touch it, you're in pain.
Yeah. And there's some things about this that aren't so funny. I'll just leave it. It was a restaurant in the 1950s Memphis.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it at that. If you know what that means, great. If you don't, that's great too.
Yeah.
We're just going to leave it at that.
Welcome to our modern society.
Yeah. But all right. So anyways, let's get on to gaming. There was a topic that came up in one of my solo episodes that got Wayne thinking about a related topic. And that's what we're talking about today.
Were we supposed to listen to those?
I listened to them.
Oh, okay. So you get this gold star, huh?
Yeah. John actually wants to rebut me on a few things, but first he has to get his ass in town and actually, you know, record a show with us. But anyway, one of the stories that I mentioned was the Sepak of Risos game where the group was on the shoreline of a lake. They had just had their ship shot down.
Was I in this? I was.
No,
this.
You were not in this.
No.
And the crew of another ship confronts them. And one of them bluffed about having heavy weapons on a far bank of the lake where it basically had the group pinned down and they would have to do whatever this guy said. And John got kind of upset about that. And this I was talking about GM trust and such, when in fact, even per my notes, this guy was lying. He was not telling the truth. He was actually in a worse situation than they were. He was just bluffing to try and get control of things. That's not where we're going to go with this. But somebody on the forums asked me something. They said, well, wait a minute. If a PC, a player character, had done this to one of the NPCs, there's a good chance that you, meaning me, having the GM style that I do, might have asked for some kind of bluff or diplomacy or BS type role to see if the lie was plausible. And so his question was, so why didn't you give them, meaning the player characters, a role to see if this guy was BSing? Now, I'm going to give my response, and I'm going to pass this off to Wayne. So just to answer that question, this is also what I said on the forums. The line that I am always trying to walk is if you tell your people, oh, by the way, roll notice, you've basically just handed them the metagame information.
Yeah.
There's something going on here.
Unless you do a lot of red herring. Roll your notice. Okay. Roll your notice. Okay. Roll your notice.
Yeah,
it's annoying and stupid.
Well, and it can also lead to training the group to do a very negative thing, which is you can't accomplish anything without somebody saying, I want to roll my bluff. I want to roll my sense motive.
What do you do? I go into the next room. I open the door to go in the next room. Oh, wait. No. I search for traps. I look in the keyhole. I search for secret doors.
Exactly. I use my racial traits for all species. It just goes on and on and on. And so I don't want that either. But what I said to this guy was I gave him a list of at least, I think it's 3 or 4 clues that had been dropped in the plot that would, if the party was noticing these things, and I won't blame them for not noticing because they're not in my head, but there were at least 3 clues I had dropped that this guy was lying. And if anyone had said whether they picked up on those clues or not, do I think this guy is telling the truth? I absolutely would have given them a role on that. No questions asked. I would have straight given them a role, and I would have given them a fair answer about whether this guy was telling the truth or not. Wayne, take it away from there.
Yeah, so this got me thinking a lot about player knowledge versus character knowledge versus the whole meta aspect. And like you mentioned, if you say, you know, roll your notice, well, everyone then knows that either there's something to be noticed or you're just screwing with the group. So they think that there may be something. And what do you do if you say roll your notice and there's really nothing there and someone rolls like a 25?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing there. Or now there is something there, but there wasn't a second ago. And it all gets into that meta aspect that's really made notice difficult for me. It's like, I don't want to tell people, roll your sense motive, roll your empathy when they're talking to people, because I don't want to start that thought process of, are they lying, are they not? And I don't want to have the players ask that. I don't want the players to go, oh, I want to have a sense motive on this. So I want all of that to be obscured, but keep in the character's ability to do that. So I've decided what I'm going to try doing, I don't know if it's going to work or not, is I want to get some roles from the players beforehand that are just notice roles, alertness roles, sense motive, whatever. Just get some roles from everyone, write them all down, and then as the game goes on, you know, mark them off as they get used. So they run into a situation that where I would ask for a notice role, I see, oh, they're going to make that notice role this time. Here's what you noticed.
And that's one approach that I have heard a lot of GMs suggest, and I don't have a problem with. I think it's a great strategy, is to take a piece of paper, and at the top of the piece of paper, you have every character and what we would consider their obscure skills. Skills where the use of these, you don't want to get in the middle of the game. So this is not like your attack rolls.
Right.
This is going to be something like sense motive, notice an object being hidden, whatever.
If somebody says specifically, I want to investigate, I'd have them roll it right there, not go to one of these
right.
pre-ones.
But what you could do is, for example, they walk up to somebody and they're lying through their teeth. Okay, let's say there's five players. You look at each of the relevant skills they have, if any, and let's say all five of them have something. Look at that and say player A got roll one, player B got roll two, and you just scratch off the next five numbers on there and see if any of them succeeded. Apart from them seeing you diddle on your notes, which right. as a game master who uses notes like I do.
You diddle on your notes?
Yes.
Oh my. Maybe I should get some notes.
But that's not going to fly too high on the radar. The strategy that I have leaned toward is if there's something to be noticed like that, I try to give them some clue, some in-game suspicion that it's there, and I won't roll for them. I won't have a sheet, but I will simply see if they notice it, and if or not notice what's going on, but notice the clues and ask for it, at which point I'll give them a roll on anything. Now, I think a fair retort to that, and this is probably an internal inconsistency in my GMing style, is I'm a big believer that the player is not the character. Well, the fact that the player didn't put these things together doesn't mean the character wouldn't have. And so I think you could make a very fair argument that I'm being internally inconsistent, and I ought to do the note board plus, you know, hey, here's their roles. Like, you don't even have to have them assigned to people. You just roll a D20 or whatever it is 100 times, just write those roles down in order and scratch them off as they get used. And once again, just have a cheat sheet that has the relevant character skills up above so you can reference who would have what to observe this occurring.
I have a slight modification on this because I've heard that before, you know, where you collect a handful of roles from each mm-hmm. from each character before you play, you know, you have 10 roles written down for everybody. I think that the way I would rather see that done is that you, Wayne, or the GM, whoever, basically is aware of these skills, like what Dan had mentioned, the ones that are like that, the sense motive, the notice, the whatever, the bluff, these roles where you're trying to keep the meta of it. And so you have that written down from all of us. And then when it comes to that point, you basically look and see who's involved. If it's just my character that's there, you look and see, all right, what's my alertness in for my character? Oh, okay, it's at 2. And then you just make the roll for me. Now, what we're taking out of the equation there is that you fucking suck as a dice roller.
I was about to point that out.
But in all things being equal, I mean, I like that approach better because what it does is, and that there's a lot of GM trust there, which I have completely in you, no reason not to, is I completely trust you to know what my skills are and to roll that. That way you roll it, and if I succeed, then you tell me. If I don't succeed, you go on, and I'm none the wiser. And that's I like that, you know, because you don't have to have the whole list of things. And the other thing is, like, if I roll 10, if I do this beforehand, I know that might be coming up or whatever, and it's a little cumbersome to have all that there. Just, you know, roll it yourself. I mean, it's a little bit more work on your part, because I said you have to have sort of characters relevant, you know, stats, but you know, it's not all of them. It's not all of our skills. It's right. just the ones that are going to keep you from doing that.
The third, I kind of like that because you'll never find anything because I roll horribly.
well, that's true.
the way I see it is that, not even the way I see it, the way I prefer it as both a game master and a player, is that these skills are tools for a player. The skills that you have, the bluff, the diplomacy, the whatever, these are buttons that the player presses. And the player can press them anytime they want. That doesn't necessarily mean that I have to tell them, you know, it's like the example you said, okay, well, roll your alertness or your perception or whatever. Well, I roll a 25 on it. Does that mean as a game master I have to put something there? Or is it valid for me to say, you don't see anything because there's nothing there to see? You know, you're in a parking lot that's completely flat and you're looking for the Titanic. That just is not there. But you really know for a fact that it really totally isn't there.
You feel damn certain.
Yeah. I don't want to track what's on a character sheet or a player's character sheet. I just don't want to track that. There's a lot of things I don't want to track when I run a game. Mm-hmm. But to have, I mean, think about the logistics of this. You have a whole room full of people here that you're gaming for. Not three, but you have like five or six. So that means you have five or six characters. Well, each character, okay, so Wayne's pretty good at bluffing. Dan is not that good at bluffing. Pat is really great at bluffing. Beth is sort of okay at bluffing. And Sarah is kind of good at bluffing. Okay, that gets bluffing out of the way. Diplomacy. Wayne is kind of good at diplomacy. And so now it's just like, okay, diplomacy and bluff and spot and perception, alertness and all this stuff that we use every single game all the time. And now I have a fucking spreadsheet in front of me. And it's just like, oh my God, what have I done to myself?
Certainly depends upon the game. Some games are going to be better or worse.
Yeah, better or worse. And I totally acknowledge the weakness in the way, again, that I kind of prefer to approach it, because I don't think that there's a hard line of what's right and wrong here. It's preference between the game master and the players. But the weakness in the approach is, of course, the players and trust. It gets back to trust of walking into the room. I search for traps. I search for hidden doors. I search for hidden treasure. I search the roof. I search the da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And my answer to that is if I take over a group, say I just burst into the room and I slap that game master out of a chair and I sit down and the players are doing it, it's like, okay, you walk into a room. Well, I do this. It's like, how about we make one roll?
Yeah.
And then it's just like, based on that one roll, I will tell you what happens.
In a bad way. I want to say it was a second edition D&D game.
Which is made for that.
Well,
or lends itself to it.
No, it wasn't that exact issue. It was a different one. Mm. I made the mistake of using one illusion.
At least you didn't use one frog.
Every encounter thereafter led off with every jackass at the table declaring, I attempt to disbelieve it.
Yeah. I disbelieve that ever happened, Dan.
I wish I could.
Why don't we just say you're in an eternal state of disbelief all the time?
I know you didn't listen to that episode because you told me that before recording.
Right.
Or maybe during recording. But
I'll tell you right now, I didn't listen to the damn episode.
But yeah, that was kind of what I came back to, is I think it's about player GM trust.
Absolutely.
That you trust that I, as a game master, am not going to screw you. And if you had a chance at something, I'll leave that in there. Mm-hmm. I think a third way of handling this, and this is another approach I've used, is I've asked players for roles and not told them why. For example, let's say they're trying to talk to someone, and while they're talking to them, this person's actually pulling a gun out of the small of their back. You know, they've got a gun in their waistband.
Of the small.
Literally, yes. Literally implanted. It's implanted in the lumbar.
Shadowrun, man. Cyberpunk. Totally.
I say it's just a robot. It's like RoboCop. Instead of the leg, it's the back.
But somebody's reaching around to pull a gun out of their waistband.
Yeah.
Now, I might not have everybody at the table roll, but I might say, well, wait a minute. Right now, Pat's the guy talking to this person. Mm-hmm. He's the one who's got the best angle to see it. And so I might just say, you're sitting there talking. And I might just say, Pat, roll me some dice.
Yeah.
And I won't tell him what he's rolling against. I won't tell him, is this a roll to notice someone sneaking up on him? Is this a roll to notice something like a camera that's now suddenly turned toward them? Is this a roll to see if this guy's lying? Is this a roll to see if this guy's drawing a gun? I won't say what the roll's for. Yeah. So I still keep that mystery at the metagame level, and I don't encourage people to roll for everything because he doesn't even know why he's rolling, but I am fairly evaluating that roll against skills or attributes that he has. Well,
and for the people who run games more like me, and that's fine, that's totally great, I can do the same thing, but for me, it's high-low. Because the way I see it is I am interacting with Pat. We're having a conversation. The guy's talking about, like, so how's the weather? And Pat's like, he knows something's up. It's like, I don't know. How is the weather? Are we talking about
who is this?
And so, you know, there's like this intense, not quite as cheesy as all that, role play going on. I would have to kind of stop and work the algebra in my head of, okay, so this is a difficulty, this, and he's going to have to roll his perception, which is this. Pat, can you roll me a D2? No, I'm sorry, it's a D10 in this rule system. Can you roll me? I don't like that. It would slow me down. I don't like that. So I would just say, you know, how's the weather? Pat, roll me a D20. Boom, he rolls D20, we play high-low. And in my mind, it's like he gets a 20. Boom, Pat, you see this guy out of the corner of your eye literally pull a gun out of the small of his back. Where does he keep his kidneys?
Or his lower spine.
Or his lower spine. But you're playing a fantasy game. You don't even know what a gun is. Exactly. You're totally freaked out by this.
Mm-hmm. So we had a situation in the game this past Sunday for a notice roll. I don't know if you guys have noticed this.
No, I failed my notice roll.
I think we failed that roll.
Ah! High five.
I have started while running Fate. When I roll, I do cover the dice. Mm-hmm. I don't
do a terrible job of it.
I don't. I'm not really trying to obscure, mostly.
You have small, sexy hands.
True. Mm-hmm. Basically, I don't do it in other systems, but I do in Fate because it's such a minor movement back and forth that I like to keep it until the other side's done their roll as well, mm-hmm. because it's typically a roll-off, so I usually keep it hidden. So we had a situation in this week's game where Pat's character is turning on a laptop. And I'm rolling for a sleeping NPC to see if he gets woken up by the Windows sound of the laptop when it loads up. Mm-hmm. And I roll, and I, as a person, I roll 4+. I let out a wow, completely giving away that I've rolled really well for this.
You hit the roll, yeah. So I didn't see what you rolled, but my immediate reaction to your action was, well, this is either incredibly good for me or incredibly bah for me, because this thing with Wayne, you would have made the same reaction if you'd rolled 4-. Right. I didn't blow anything for me.
Interesting about this, though, was that the meta aspect of it made this scene more fun.
Yeah.
Pat knew that I had either botched it bad or I had done really well.
Yeah.
And so I will say a poor role player would have started hedging bets. I mean, he would have started casting silence, but nothing has happened. All that's happened is everything's going according to plan. Mm-hmm. Pat's not detected. Sure. Wayne makes a roll, goes, oh, wow. Poor player goes, I start casting silence, and I get ready a portal to jump out, and, oh, I'm just hedging my bets. Pat is like, I was watching you. You're like, oh, crap. Something happened, and you're just like, gotta keep going. Yeah. And he just kept rolling with it.
We have
two minutes
of him deciding what he's going to do, knowing that at some point I'm going to drop the shoe on him.
Yep.
But he lets the character keep going on.
Yeah.
And but the meta aspect made that one more fun.
And after going on my bender about players needing to trust the GM, I will take that the other direction of the GM needs to trust the players. I think the GM at some point needs to be able to say, look, I don't have to hide everything I'm doing because I trust my role players to have some sliver of metagame knowledge and still play their characters correctly. I mean, I think there is a danger in pulling back the veil too far just because as human beings, there's a limit to what we can do. But
you don't want to see how the sausage is made. But,
yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah. But let me throw out one other idea here, which is a good way of keeping it above the table and doing it on the spot, but obfuscating a little further, have somebody else make the roll. Let's say, for example, I want to see if Pat notices something. Let's say Chad's character is not even in the scene. He's off somewhere else.
Awesome.
And I say, Chad, give me a roll. And in truth, Chad's actually rolling for Pat, but neither of them know this.
Yeah.
But I'm going to use Chad's roll to see if Pat notices the guy drawing the gun.
I like that better just because for me...
How well do you think that would work? You know, again, you and Pat, and you say, Chad, roll your spot. Do you think that would pull, like getting really specific with it and keep it above?
Yeah, I wouldn't name the skill.
And that's my... And it also, it's totally going to depend on the system too. Like, actually, it'd be easier in Fate. Like, Chad, make a roll. You're not even telling him what, just roll the Fate dice and you see what that result is.
No, I think it's harder in Fate because the player doesn't get a chance to put in a chip.
Well, man, that's true.
Wayne took away all my chips.
Yeah. No, you gave them
you
away.
Used them.
I used them.
I was proud of you.
I was so proud of you. You used your fate chips.
In everything I did, I had a great time, and I got to do a lot of stuff at the end. Even in that, I didn't even use a chip. Mm-hmm. Didn't really need one, I don't guess, but I mean, because I like the way things went out, but yeah. I mean, I could have, and I just still didn't use a chip. But anyway, that's beside the point. But I'd get you on the chip. It's a fate die roll. It's four dice. It's four six-siders, and that's that. Whereas with another system, it might be, you know, who knows what you might be rolling. If it's D20, it's probably just a 20-sided die. But that's the thing. I like that better because at least it sort of misdirects it from the player that you're talking about. Because my whole thing is anytime, even if you go the route of just roll a die to me, what that is telling me is something has just come up. And depending on my failure or success, I'm going to learn something. Because then if I fail the roll, I still know as a player, I've missed something.
Something happened.
And
yeah.
I don't want to pull the veil away at all. I would truly love to be able to play it where, like I said, you roll that for me. I don't even know that it's been done. And if I succeed, then you tell me, you know what? You just, as this is happening, you notice this. You notice that his spine is coming out of his ass and turning into
a
gun.
You notice that he's pulling part of his spinal column out. Yes. In fact, has a barrel, not a spinal cord.
Have you ever seen the movie Night Watch?
No.
Notre Dorza? There's a character in that. It's modern fantasy. It's a Russian modern fantasy. Really good movie. Very, very good book. And I hesitate to say bad guy because it's really complex, but the bad guy, for sake of argument, pulls out his spine.
Oh, good God.
And the back of his neck, pulls it up and out, and it is a spinal column sword.
Wow.
Yeah, it's
pretty
hardcore.
And how does he stand?
He's kind of like this immortal magic guy, so that's like not even a problem for him.
A wizard.
Okay.
He is totally down with this.
But for me, I want that sense of just really the sense of mystery and the not knowing. And right. I know it's hard to achieve. Mm-hmm. It puts more impetus on the game master. And like for somebody like you, Chet, you're going to hate that but you don't like crunchy systems to begin with.
Yeah.
So for you, the high-low thing is good. But like for mm-hmm. Wayne or someone like me or maybe you,
right.
I like the crunchier systems and just doing it that
way. I don't have a problem with crunchier systems. I just have you guys run the rules.
Well,
yeah.
So I think it's an appropriate rule. So if you can, I think you can find a mix. But I would suggest finding a mix and trying, because I like the idea of keeping it meta and keeping it from the players to even
we
know
need a
that there was some
that
kind
says,
of there's
FTB,
some kind of
keeping it meta.
That's right. There was some kind of a point there that you may or may not have gotten, because just that knowledge changes things for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
Because I realized roll your alertness and I roll 4-. I'm like, well, I didn't notice it. Whatever the fuck it was.
I don't have a problem with meta knowledge. Now there's a balance that, again, you don't really want to see how the sausage is made, and you do want mystery and stuff, but I don't have a problem with the players having all this meta knowledge. It's not a problem, because players' knowledge and character actions are different. In fact, I think that there is an element of meta human drama, like Pat was doing in the bathroom, where he knew the hammer was going to drop on him. But he knew his character didn't know that, and he took it like a man. He stood up and walked into it.
Actually, he struck down to a cockroach.
I've always been a very staunch proponent of in-character and out-of-character knowledge, because I'm very big on that. Because one of the things I hate is when people are sitting around the game table and another character is off doing something to the side, but they're still over there at the table, so that everybody hears what you're in another part of the city and you're doing something, but we all hear it, and then later on, all of a sudden, without you ever reporting it back to us, we all know. And I'm like, God damn it, no, you don't, you weren't there. Or what's worse is you're doing your thing and all of a sudden Chad pipes up and says, Wayne, do this. I'm like, you're f-ing not there, shut the hell up. You know,
hate our Dresden game, because
it's not so bad, but I mean,
I've done some calling on that. I point out, it's like, your character wasn't there.
Yeah, and I
specifically asked, did you share this information with the group? So I haven't seen this actually done with like perception checks or anything, but I did once play in a Pathfinder Society game where the guy ahead of time had us roll all of our initiatives. And that speeded up combat more than I ever imagined. I didn't realize until recently.
Like you rolled 10 times and just wrote the results down?
Yeah, he had it on a sheet and he was ready to go.
Why not just roll it once and use that for the whole game?
You could do that too. But when the combat came around, he didn't have to ask initiative. It just seamlessly transitioned.
Yeah.
Because you know how we've talked about when someone says roll initiative, it kind of takes you out.
Yeah.
In this case, it rolled right into the combat without ever transitioning.
Yeah.
It worked incredibly well.
Huh. I'm certainly glad to have some fellow hosts back.
Hi.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a job. IT contracting sucks.
For you folks at home, love to hear your ideas. If you've had issues with this and found your own workarounds, maybe something we didn't bring up, ideas that we didn't come up with, love to hear that. As always, have a great week and great games, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.